It's the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America. The National Security Hour exposes the wolves in sheep's clothing and their nefarious plots to undermine and destroy U.S. national security.
Welcome to the National Security Hour on the American Outlaw Talk Radio Network on iHeartRadio, where you will hear the voice of freedom, the outlaw truth, from military and intel experts. America Outlaw Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps available on Apple, Android, and Alexa, where we stream 24/7. And now you can also hear them on the podcast on those same apps. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Sarge Singiri, U.S. Army retired. I am the host for today and also a board member on the National Security Hour. I'm also the host of New Paradigms with Sarge Singiri, which you can catch on Mondays on my show on Rumble and also at the same time on American Right Media, which airs on Wednesdays. My guest today is Nikki Kenyon. She is an Associate Managing Director at the Institute for Financial Integrity, focused on content and training. She also serves as a Special Advisor for the Joint Task Force for Anti- and Counter-Corruption, which assists governments and civil societies in countering corruption and transnational crime. She has more than 15 years of experience both in the private sector and in the government service, including Treasury's Office of Intelligence and Analysis, having managed teams that provide due diligence, Know Your Customer or KYC, sanction compliance, money laundering, and counterterrorism research and analysis for clients. During her time at the Treasury Department, she also provided training on analytic techniques, teaching analysis to generate assessments on sanction evasion, money laundering, and illicit financing. Irene, Nikki, also known as Irene, is fluent in Russian and conversational in French and German, and is a U.S. Army veteran with more than 70 years of military service. She is here today to discuss with us the secondary sanctions in a multipolar world, especially coming off the two-year anniversary of the Ukraine-Russian war, and how possibility to rise of middle powers affects sanctions. Welcome here to the show today, Irene.
Hi, thank you. It's good to see you.
I guess I'm going to start here real quick, Nikki. For those who have struggled over the past couple of years, not understanding, have sanctions work, have they not work, what is their usefulness? Are we able to utilize those in a multipolar world specifically? Can you just kind of give us a baseline as to sanctions, especially after the Russian invasion into Ukraine, given the fact that we know that the Russian GDP did go up this past year? And can you explain to our audiences what secondary sanctions are and how are they being applied against Russia?
Well, that's a lot and it's a mouthful. So first of all, 2 years after the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Russia is the most sanctioned country in the world. And by that, I don't mean that it's embargoed. There are no comprehensive sanctions against Russia. What I do mean is that it has the most designations, whether they are against individuals, entities, vessels, aircraft, against, you know, sectoral sanctions against certain sectors of the Russian economy. There's a lot. And, you know, asking whether sanctions are effective or not is kind of a loaded question. It's kind of an incorrect question to ask. I will say that sanctions are most effective when they're done multilaterally. And that's what's been going on ever since Russia invaded Crimea back in 2014. The global powers have gotten together and said, we are all going to coordinate and we are all going to impose sanctions on Russia. Okay. So that's number one. So you talked about GDP going up. Well, let's remember that GDP is going up because Russia right now is in a wartime economy. So they have taken their economy and they have turned it around to specifically focus on the war in Ukraine, right? Wartime economies are always robust. The question is, what's going to happen when the war is over? I'm of the personal opinion as somebody who worked in number one, defense economics at DIA, and number two, at the Office of Intelligence and Analysis at Treasury, is that it is economically more, it's more viable for Russia to continue this war. Okay, so families are getting payouts from dead soldiers. Dead soldiers are getting payouts, from being maimed on the battlefield. A lot of jobs are now being, turned over in the defense sector. So a lot of new jobs are opening up, but it's all military focused, right? So, yeah, GDP is going up. The question is, what's going to happen when the war is over? So that's number one. Number two, there have been a lot of kind of interesting and sort of intelligent designations, right? We cannot comprehensively sanction Russia. I mean, we could, but that would really impact the global economy. It's the 11th largest economy in the world. Okay. So, they still export a lot of commodities, steel and energy and, aluminum and fertilizer, all of these sorts of things, right? So, embargoing Russia would really impact the world economy. So, what the global powers have done is try not to crash Russia's economy. That was not the goal of the sanctions regime that was imposed. Okay. The goal was to limit Russia's resources and to limit those resources in order for it to be able to conduct war, right? So, what's Russia's biggest, budget revenue generator? It's energy. So, they've imposed a price cap on Russian oil. So, the oil is still flowing, but Russia can't make as much of a profit on it. So that's number one. Number two, Biden signed Executive Order 14114 in December, and that authorizes OFAC, the Office of Foreign Assets Control, to impose secondary sanctions on foreign financial institutions that help Russia's military, right? So it's not like it's not, oh, you can't ever do. You can't do business with Russia. That's not it. What they're doing is they're doing kind of a very targeted, very laser focus on financial institutions that are specifically helping Russia's military. And it's funny because I teach these classes and most people are like, oh, I know what secondary sanctions are. No, no, you don't. So I'm going to quickly explain what secondary sanctions are because I think that's important in order to understand their effectiveness, right? So normal sanctions, as far as the United States goes, who's bound by normal sanctions, right? U.S. persons, wherever they're located, U.S. permanent legal residents, US companies and their branches, and any person who is physically located in the United States, all of them must comply with US sanctions. Foreign citizens visiting the United States must comply. So, if you're from Great Britain, you come over to the United States, you can't commit murder, right? You can't violate US laws. Well, guess what? Sanctions are US law. So you can't violate those either. If you're transacting in US dollars, that's US jurisdiction. If you're a non-US person, you may not cause a US person to violate sanctions. And if you do, you yourself have violated US law, US sanctions, right? So, we've seen cases where, like, a manager at a foreign subsidiary of a US company lies to the parent company and causes the US parent to violate sanctions. That manager is in violation of US sanctions, right? So, what happens with secondary sanctions? So if you're a foreign person, you're transacting in your own country's currency, and your country has not imposed sanctions on Russian entities, if there's no US nexus whatsoever, you're not doing anything illegal, right? So that's where the United States came up with the concept of secondary sanctions. It's strictly a US concept, right? They allow the designation of persons who engage in activities that would normally be subject to US sanctions if US jurisdiction or US person was involved, right? So, the US can't tell you what to do in your own country, right? That just doesn't work that way. If there's no US nexus, if you're not using US dollars, you can do whatever you want. But so the US can't tell you what to do, but it can tell US persons that they can't transact with you. So hey, guess what? If you're a foreign company, if you're transacting with the Russian military and your country has not sanctioned this particular Russian military entity, okay, and you're a bank that's like, well, I'm gonna finance transactions with the Russian military. I'm just gonna do that because no US nexus exists. So we can put you on the SCM list. We can cut off your access to the US dollar. We can't tell you what to do, but we can tell US persons that they can't do business with you. So at this point, you have to choose. You either do business with US persons, or you can do with business with your Russian pals. Which one do you think they're going to choose?
They'll choose, of course, the less risk to their business,
And reputation. Let's
and
not forget that.
reputation, we would say. But I guess this is where the question is: do you think that Russia, prior to going to war, made the calculation that, well, they're not going to be able to put an embargo on me, and would embargo would have been a crippling to the Russian economy, but at the same time, because they're so tied to the rest of the global economy, that they figured that we're so tightly tied to the rest of the global economy that they're not going to be able to break us. Now, I know, we talked about the fact that whether or not these secondary sanctions can work, especially when I was looking at the issue of these middle power nations. And believe it or not, but in an economic world, although Russia is a superpower because of his geographic location and having nuclear weapons, it's also one of the nations that is to include with Japan, UK, Italy, India, Germany, France, and Brazil, known as that type of a middle power. And I guess for us, do you think that Russia made that calculation that it was going to be able to withstand the initial sanctions against it? And with China providing the component pieces specifically for the Russian military to continue conducting their operations, to include the fact that United States is still buying uranium from the Russians, even though the House passed the bill to ensure that that we wean ourselves basically off of the Russian uranium capability. It still hasn't been signed, of course, passed in the Senate or signed by the president into law. And the fact that right after the war began initially, European Union requirements for energy went up over the past couple of years that the war has been waging. I know that the European Union has said that they're going to try to wean themselves off finally from the Russian liquid gas capabilities and other energy support requirements. But we got nations that are our allies, like India, buying Russian fuel, selling it on the markets. China, which is the lead for the Shanghai Cooperation Organization that Russia is a signatorial to, is still, managing its ability to wage war. As you've mentioned, that the Russian economy right now, GDP has gone because it's a war economy. So, okay, we have sanctions. We know that sanctions can be applied under President Biden. The strongest sanctions ever have been applied against Russia. We can't do an embargo because, as you said, the calculation is it would collapse the world economy almost. So, how are we going to be able to look at sanctions in the future and say, this is how sanctions have to morph in a future global political structure for them to have the type of deterrence that seems that Russia made the calculation that they won't? And I don't want your answer right now. We're going to come back in the second segment to talk about that. That's what really I kind of struggle with, because I truly want to see what are the effects on the global restructuring of a new world order, possibly from the lessons that we have learned from the application of sanctions and secondary sanctions against Russia and a nation that we cannot do an embargo against. I just want to make sure I remind our audiences again that all my shows go to podcast typically 1 or 2 days after the broadcast is heard on talk radio. You can hear them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, and iHeart Podcast, and many more. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts for me. We will be back for a discussion, a more detailed discussion with Nikki Kenyon, who is the Associate Managing Director at the Institute for Financial Integrity, and see if we have learned lessons that show how sanctions might be morphing in the future world.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body, and now they found the solution. The miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. Everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to the National Security Hour on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network on iHeartRadio. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Sorgas Singiri, U.S. Army retired. I am your host for our discussion on sanctions 2 years removed from the Russian-Ukraine war. My guest is Nikki Kenyon, who is an Associate Managing Director at the Institute for Financial Integrity. Prior to joining IFI, Nikki was Director of Risk Intelligence for a technology company that provided compliance, know your customer, and due diligence support and research, advisory services, and monitoring of regulatory developments in the financial crime sphere for the company's clientele. Nikki has participated on many panels and webinars for ACAMS and West Coast anti-money laundering forums, discussing topics such as the role of artificial intelligence and sanctions and AML compliance, grappling with the volatile sanctions environment, and assessing activities of Russian oligarchs. Nikki, I know I kind of left you there on the first portion of segment with a very difficult question that probably would take weeks to answer. But hey, we got 18 minutes to have you
I
on
took
the
a
ramble.
Really deep breath. hugely deep breath. So let me give you a couple of examples as far as the effectiveness of the current regime, right? When 14114 was signed in December, we started seeing reports from China, from Turkey, from the UAE, that the banks there were getting like, oh my gosh, we don't want to have secondary sanctions imposed on us. So they started putting aside a lot of their business with Russia. They started slowing the transactions. They started getting nervous. We haven't sanctioned anyone under 14114 yet. No one. And yet it's already changing behavior. So that's number one.
Nikki, did we not sanction certain individuals in China tied to the CCP that were part of some of the component pieces that are going to Russia to help their war effort? Or am I mistaken here?
No, those are not secondary sanctions. Remember, there has to be a U.S. nexus for regular sanctions to apply. And we did designate a few Chinese companies, some companies in Turkey, Kazakhstan. There were quite a few, for helping Russia's military. But those were not secondary sanctions. We actually have not imposed secondary sanctions on any foreign financial institution quite yet.
Okay, then here's where the confusion is for laymen like me. Because we say there's no nexus for the U.S., but some of the component pieces that go into those component pieces that the CCP is sending are actually made by U.S. companies or that make the chips that are U.S.-based companies that do operations there. So how do we identify what a nexus is then?
Okay, so first of all, 14114 is very, very specific. Right? It's foreign financial institutions. Okay. So these companies are not foreign financial institutions that finance and otherwise support Russia's military industrial sector. Okay. So 14114 would not apply there. We have designated Chinese entities for reshipping U.S. components, for violating trade controls. And that's the other thing, okay? I want to bring in trade controls here. Prior to Russia's full-scale invasion, half of the folks I used to work with did not know what the Bureau of Industry and Security was. Nobody knew what it was. Okay. I had a friend who called me from my old DIA days, and she was like, hey, I just went to the seminar and BIS was making a presentation about strategic trade controls, and I didn't even know what strategic trade controls were, and nobody knew what BIS is, right? So strategic trade controls are going to become more and more important because as we limit the types of technologies, machinery, tools, et cetera, that we can send to Russia, Russia's going to have to replace those, or it's going to have to spend a whole lot of money trying to evade those strategic trade controls, right? Because as we know, the higher the risk, the more it's going to cost for somebody to actually take that risk, right? So, you have transshipment hubs, and you have, companies in third countries that were helping Russia evade trade controls, right? Reshipping needed technologies because Russia didn't have any kind of way to replace those domestically. And so we started targeting them. We started putting them on the entity list. We started sanctioning them. The idea is to make it more difficult for Russia to gain the needed resources that it needs for the war in Ukraine, right? And that's where a lot of people kind of misunderstand what we're trying to do. I mean, sure, there are different goals that generally a sanctions regime can have, whether it's sending a message, whether it's cutting off somebody from the US financial system, whether it's, you know, naming and shaming, like all of that is great. Like stopping bad behavior. Yes, fantastic. Okay. But what we're doing here is very focused. We are trying to make it more and more difficult and more costly for Russia to wage war. And I think that's where, you know, that's where sanctions are going in the future. You know, we're moving away from those maximum pressure campaigns that we had during the Trump years, and we're moving into like more strategic, more smart regimes.
I guess that would make sense because I'm assuming, I'm going to make the assumption here that you're saying based on the lessons learned from the past 2 years, this would be a better application of how we use sanctions. Not that we need to develop new tools, that those tools are there. We just gotta, we've learned over the past 2 years how to focus them, especially on the issue of Russia. Because, you know, when you look at the map today, 2 years out, even when Zelensky was interviewed, Russia really has kind of controlled those lines of communication that he needed to control, you know, that it wanted to control to have effects on Ukraine. And even Zelensky has admitted if, you know, Ukraine is not able to get the weapon systems that it wants, and I don't want to get into that discussion because it's a completely different discussion, you might see, as people have stated, a stalemate develop. Now, if that stalemate develops, and now you might see a forcing of the possibility of a discussion and negotiations with the Ukrainians and the Russians, you're telling me that the past 2 years, we've learned that if we can now target specifically the ability of Russia to wage that war, but to target them waging the war is not just cutting off the type of equipment they get, especially from China and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, from Iran, that is actually giving them ballistic capabilities to use. I mean, when we have India getting oil and selling the oil, which is Russian oil, are we just basically, here's my worry. Russia does something, we block it, we go after them, and Russia moves into a different direction. Again, using our own allies, because in the long run, they know that we cannot embargo them and completely break their economy. So it seems like we're constantly just morphing on this battlefield of sanctions, but the effects on the real battlefield, that where it counts between Ukraine and Russia, a lot of people are not seeing it. So how do you take what we know is working on the sanctions side, merge it to where we can see that effect on the battlefield, especially when it comes to negotiations to try to get the Russians to give up that territory?
Look, as somebody who's studied Russia and studied Putin, I really hate trying to get into his head because, number one, it's creepy. But also, you know, I think Russia was used to us just, you know, messaging, right? So after after Crimea was invaded, like, we worked together with our Western allies. We imposed sanctions. We created sectoral sanctions. But it really didn't impact Russia a whole lot. So I think the calculus was that, well, we're just going to invade and the West ain't going to do anything. Well, you know what? He was kind of wrong, because we have done something. And even though there's more we can do, there's also that feeling that you can't just, you know, you can't just throw the entire pot of spaghetti at the wall, right? You have to gradually ratchet up the pressure. And I think, I don't know, I no longer work for the government, but I think that's what's happening, right? So now, you know, we're seeing reports that India is actually pivoting toward Saudi Arabia to purchase oil. You know, we've seen increases in Indian refiners and Indian companies actually purchasing oil from the Middle East rather than from Russia, because they're afraid of sanctions. You know, as I mentioned, Chinese banks, you know, stopping their transactions with Russian companies because they're afraid of sanctions. you know.
Irene, are those secondary sanctions that we would apply against India and an ally in the region? Again, India is still part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization,
So
ties to
again,
China.
Indian banks, right? So if an Indian bank knowingly and willfully funds transactions with the Russian military, and they got to be significant transactions, right? Because OFAC is not really in the habit of, you know, of oh, oops, I let through a $1,000 transaction, and they've got to be significant and they've got to be willful, and there's got to be like deceit involved. But if that happens, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this question then, because the biggest piece that has really kind of allowed Russia to do what it's doing, even the previous POTUS President Trump mentioned, he said, the oil, when it was at $40 a barrel, Russia wasn't going to be invading Ukraine. When it went up to $100 per barrel, they got more money and they're like, okay, we'll invade. We got money. Now, India can b take Russian oil, and they do. But they don't have to pay them in money, in Indian currency. They don't have to even pay them in dollars. They could say, okay, I'm going to send you food, humanitarian effort. Now, part of the whole reason we're trying to break the Putin's economy internally, to where the people in Russia will turn on and go, well, I don't have food on the shelves. Maybe I don't like this leadership. Or India can turn around and say, okay, we'll send weapons to an ally of yours. In this case, we'll send them to China, or we'll send them to whoever it is, one of the stands, and the stands turn around and give those weapons to the Russians. Three, four people are moved. How do you address that issue when it comes to sanctions? How do you coordinate all this? And frankly, who's really coordinating it? Sometimes people will say,
Well, I mean, we definitely are, right? We're coordinating. We're doing intelligence sharing. We've got several task forces that are multilateral all over the world, and we're sharing information. That's why the engagements with, you know, Central Asian countries have been, you know, very kind of frank. You know, because they are afraid of being cut off from the US dollar. They are being afraid of being cut off from the world's reserve currency. They are afraid of not having access to the global financial system. So when we see that those transactions, obviously we engage with the companies. Do you remember this was last year? There were two reports out on Haas Automation where you know, media outlets and researchers discovered that Haas CNC machines, computer numeric machines, were being shipped, transshipped through like a Chinese company to Russia, and they were using those machines to make weapons. Well, you know, there were two reports. The first report was about like them, you know, sending these machines to a company called Abamet, which was a Russian holding company. The second report, they said, well, we stopped sending those machines to Abamet, so now we're sending them to this other Chinese company. I have a source with whom I talked just a couple of weeks ago who was actually involved in that research. And, you know, he and I said, have you seen any more transactions from Haas once those reports came out? And he was like, not a peep, not a peep. So my educated guess is they probably got a call from regulators and they're having a conversation. So that's number one. And number two, it's a huge reputational hit because who wants to be known as the company that's helping Putin murder civilians, murder children? They just murdered five children in Odessa, right? So, you know, he was like, since those reports, we have not seen a single transaction that showed, you know, the transshipment of those machines to Russia. So, you know, I think it's a slow haul. Like I think it's a heavy lift. But we do share information and we do talk to our counterparts in other countries, and we do explain to them what kind of evidentiaries we need in order to be able to designate properly. You know, again, it's not easy. I mean, you know, on one hand, it would be really like so much easier if we just embargoed Russia, and just said, nope, nobody's allowed to do business with the Russians, period, end of story, cut off completely. But on the other hand, again, it would have an impact on the global economy. So, you know, we're not going to do that. Plus,
yeah, but in the long run, though, so it has an impact on the global economy, but you're shortening the timeline on defeating Putin. So maybe it's a simplistic way of looking at it, but I do want to talk about that in the third segment when we start, because when you look at even the embargo we put against Iran, I mean, we had sanctions against Iran after they took the hostages. And today they have enough capability to make 3 nuclear bombs. And we're negotiating for possibly another JCPOA with them, and they could become a nuclear power. One of the adding to the 9 that we already have. So, you know, for me as a military guy, you know, I would like to see the results 2 days after they're executed. But I do understand some of these things take time. But that's it. I do want to remind our audiences again to be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for the latest news and happenings. We all must do our part and share the stories, the articles, the videos, so that we can help secure America's future. We will be back with Nikki Kenyon, who is hopefully going to give us a lessons learned perspective as to maybe how sanctions can be utilized against these governments in the future to have maybe a much quicker impact than sometimes we see ourselves. With that said, we'll be back for a final segment.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's AmericaOutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created heart and vascular health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Welcome back to the National Security Hour on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network on iHeartRadio. We are back for our final segment with Nikki Kenyon, who is an associate managing director at the Institute for Financial Integrity, focused on content and training. Nikki, I do want to get to two pieces real quick, especially I do want to talk about what you know and what you have learned with how AI has maybe helped us become stronger in the sanctions world. But with that said, I guess when I left it in our second segment, you know, look, I was asked about Iran, And I said, it is a very simple equation. Iran has ayatollahs. They are hated, absolutely hated by everybody in Iran. They're hated by everybody in Iran.
I got friends from Iran. Yep.
Yeah. So you don't have to worry about them being hated by anybody outside. They're hated by Iran. As much as they're hated by everybody in Iran, they are a minority too. They are a minority compared to everybody who hates them in Iran. But they hold the guns. As long as they got the guns, they're in charge. Now, we have done sanctions against them since the hostages were taken in the 80s, and we have even put embargoes at times. But the ayatollahs have the ability now to possibly have 3 nuclear weapons, and they have had 10 years of developing ballistic missile capabilities that the Russians are using. So for those of us who are a bit impatient, I would say, on the issues of sanctions, I'm not disagreeing that sanctions don't work. They work. We use them. They're a tool that we have to use. But with the rise of, I again say, these middle powers, whether it be Vietnam, whether it be Brazil, whether it be other capabilities, how do we, looking into the future, still use the same model of sanctions that we used a decade ago and say that we're going to see anything different? Am I just misunderstanding where we are today based on the lessons learned from a couple of years ago? Or is there something that you see or you think that should be used in future, especially when it comes to AI, to make the effectiveness of these sanctions to be much much more precise, maybe have a much quicker resolution than we are seeing today, given the fact that even in the Ukraine-Russia war, Russia is still occupying territory in Ukraine, and unless the Russian military rises up against Putin, I don't know if we're ever going to see them exiting stage left and giving up the territories that are under their control.
Look, there's a whole lot to unpack in what you said. So I'm gonna try and make it a little bit brief. Okay, so number one, I'm not a huge AI expert, but I will say that AI is helping unpack, unpeel, cluster, find patterns of evasion, right? Because that's, one of the biggest things that financial institutions and firms are dealing with is these constant adjustments, right? Russia's not stupid. They've been dealing with sanctions for 10 years. So they know how to evade them. So, we're constantly having to adjust and constantly having to catch up. I think I mentioned it in the past at some point that we used to call it at Treasury when I worked there, we used to call it playing whack-a-mole, right? So the mole jumps up out of one hole, you smack it down, it jumps up in another hole, right? So, it's not easy. So I think AI is a way to more efficiently help firms and financial institutions detect and deter evasion efforts and efforts at, using fraud to gain access to the resources that Russia doesn't have. 2 years after Russia's invasion, BIS, the Bureau of Industry and Security, has strengthened its enforcement policies, increased cooperation with the interagency, with academia, with industry, with foreign governments, and included more than 465 individuals and entities from Russia, China, Iran, and elsewhere on the entity list. We're seeing increased prosecutions. There was a huge case a few months ago, a guy named Hans de Gaetere, I don't speak Dutch or Flemish, but he was a Belgian businessman, and he ran this gargantuan network that basically procured prohibited technologies for Russia. He was arrested by the Belgians. He was put on the entity list along with his companies. He was sanctioned by OFAC. He was, and his companies. And the United States is prosecuting him. So they indicted him on violation of trade controls, right? So we're definitely doing that. There's more to be done. obviously, especially I think in the realm of technology. You know, Russia still relies on software to do a lot of the things, you know, it's like to run its infrastructure, you know, like make sure that its like internet is running, you know, stuff like that. You know, so trying to take some steps to mitigate the risk of Russia continuing to access software that helps its war in Ukraine, you know, they're still dependent on Western software capabilities. They specifically focus on the military industrial complex. So we want to be able to disrupt that software. And that's critical because, again, you know, Russia's unable to substitute that software. So it still continues to use Western software to manufacture munitions, key military systems, to run them. Right. So, you know, I see technology becoming more of a factor. And, you know, we are learning, right? The price cap is a brand new thing. It is specifically designed to make sure that the oil still flows, but that Russia's profits from it decrease. And you know what? If it wasn't working, then Russia wouldn't be like desperately trying to claw its way into, you know, into shipping its oil at a higher price, right?
Well, one other thing it has done is that, you know, with Ukraine at least sending, you know, utilizing drones to hit some of the Russian reserves, you know, they've, you know, Russia understands that I cannot just ship all my oil out because now it becomes a strategic issue for me. So that does make sense. It's a good lesson learned. From the institution side of the house, what I would like to ask you is, you know, after 9/11, we created the Homeland Security. Is there anything that you have seen that you would say, you know what, if we merge these two departments together or these entities or created something different, that it would give us a much better and broader ability to coordinate what, you know, in this case, Ukrainians are doing on battlefield, to how, you know, we use sanctions to be able to really leverage and break the Russians' ability to wage war? Is there anything that you have seen institutionally, regardless of AI being there or not? Or is there something that you see and say, look in the future, this is what I would recommend? And I know I'm asking you to look into the future. Look, there's a lot of general officers today who are investing in weapon systems that right now today we realize, you know what, you could have had a cheap drone that could just do the same thing that you're trying to invest all this money on these weapon systems on. And I don't think anybody, whether it be on the East or the West, saw the coming of the drone technology that's being used both in Ukraine, is being used with the Iranians and the Americans fighting each other, is being used in Israel and Gaza Strip. Is there anything that exists like that, if you were future looking, that would say, this is where I see sanctions 10 years from now and how they could be integrated at whatever level you think institutionally to be able to have that deterrence effect that we all hoped that sanctions would?
You know, I'm not a huge fan of bureaucracies, to be honest with you. I prefer seeing the kind of cooperation that we are seeing, whether it's the price cap coalition of the different countries. So, you know, your G7, your Australia, you know, that type of thing. Whether it's the repo task force, whether it's the disruptive technologies task force, whether it's klepto capture, I prefer seeing that type of cooperation because this is where, you know, this is where information gets shared. I hate stovepiping. I think that was one of our biggest failures before 9/11. I think a lot of the information was stovepiped. So I hate that siloing of information. You know, the Commerce Department's Bureau of Industry and Security, you know, they want an intelligence capability. You know, when you take all of these different agencies that work together, and they have put out like joint guidances, joint advisories, you know, compliance notes, you name it. When they work together, It's actually more effective than, you know, building yet another bureaucratic whatever the thing, right?
How would you recommend it? I mean, everything has to be legislated if they don't work together, because, you know, I hate to say it, lessons learned from the Ukraine-Russian war may be forgotten. 10 years after the war might have been over, however it's over. So what would your recommendation be if you have to legislate it? How would you legislate this to where it actually keeps us on track for future wars?
Well, I mean, these types of task forces are not legislated, and they don't need to be. They need to, the heads of departments and agencies need to get together, and they need to start sharing information and working together to target these entities and these individuals, you know, whatever war, right? Targeting is a team effort. Sanctions are a long game. Okay, so I mean, I'm not a policy person, so I can't tell you like what we should legislate and what we shouldn't. But I will say that when we work multilaterally, that's when things happen.
You know, it's again, I know that the economies of the world are tied together. Is there any way we can learn to ensure that in the future, no country, even a superpower, can be embargoed? Is there anything that we can do besides, I understand, being economically more self-sustaining? Is there anything we could do from the sanctions perspective that things are going to be there that we could globally as an institution automatically, you know, just... Country A invades country B, and I don't have to wait on the Security Council to have a meeting to veto something or pass something unanimously, that these things can automatically start executing to where even if a nation is as big as Russia is, that we can really collapse this economy. And the other issue that we run into, as an example, you know, in the NATO nations, NATO nations can make deals with whoever they want. Turkey is a NATO nation. It makes deals with whoever it wants, even purchasing, you know, equipment from adversaries, and it sometimes works against our own allies. With this Shanghai Cooperation Organization and China being so large and the lead, and Russia being inside of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, have we done anything to where maybe we have something in the pipeline that goes against a Shanghai Cooperation Organization, as an example, where they would have something in the pipeline to go against NATO for their benefit and the countries that are associated inside of that low sphere?
I don't see that happening, number one. China does not want a hot war with the United States. It doesn't. You know, Russia doesn't want a hot war with the United States. I mean, you know, Medvedev can drink all the vodka in the world and he can sit there and threaten the West with nuclear weapons. But honestly, no. I mean, I think the trick is smart engagement.
Irene, much appreciated. I know it's a complicated subject. I ask you questions that would take months to unravel, and even policymakers probably couldn't do it. But, I
can write a book.
You can write a book. You can write a book about it. I do want to remind our audiences again, you can find out more about this particular show and get all the latest podcasts if you go to the menu navigation bar and American Out Loud. AmericaOutLoud.com under our show or schedule, and then you will be in the know. Again, I want to thank you. I call her Irene. She also, of course, goes named Nikki Kenyon, the Associate Managing Director at the Institute for Financial Integrity. It's been wonderful having you here. I do want to thank our audiences for being here. And I want to thank you all for joining us on this mission. The National Security Hour is the tip of the spear and the epic battle to defend the United States of America with liberty and justice for all. Irene, Nikki, I want to give the last 2 minutes to you with closing thoughts, because I know after people have left listening to this conversation, they're probably a little more confused about sanctions than we were trying to have it be. But it is what it is. At least it's a tool that we can use.
I mean, honestly, if sanctions were easy, then I wouldn't have a job, right? I mean, there's a lot of complexity, especially in this sanctions regime that we are imposing against Russia. I mean, there are a lot of firms and financial institutions that would rather just de-risk and say, nope, we're not doing any business with Russia. And some of them have. You know, big companies like Microsoft have decided that they're not doing any new Russia business, period. End of story. You know, as my friend Chip Ponce says, you know, we'd like you to get to yes, but it's difficult. And nobody said it was going to be easy. But also, you know, if we toss the entire sanctions regime at Russia and say, hey, guess what, you're cut off, there's nowhere left to go. And Russia will have nothing else to lose. So, you know, smartly implementing sanctions as a foreign policy tool, I think is going to get it done. Yeah, it's slow and it's a slog, but I think we will eventually get there.
No, I think so. I think we'll get there. Unfortunately, I hope that we're not here a year from now having this discussion again, because, you know, you have people dying on both sides. Putin doesn't care about the soldiers are dying, you know,
no, he doesn't.
On his end. Frankly, I don't know if there's going to be enough Ukrainians, unfortunately, left in this fight. So we're hoping that the sanctions have effects. We're hoping that they can have some significant effects, and our prayers are with our allies in the region. God bless them and keep them safe. Nikki, thank you very much for coming here. And I know that me and you are going to have this discussion on my show, New Paradigms, with Sargis and Gary. We're going to go live sometime in the near future, and hoping that you know, sanctions can have the effects we want them to have. Thank you very much again. This is the National Security Hour. I am your host, Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Singer, U.S. Army retired. We will see you back next week. God bless.